annual report, so you don't have to go in detail on some of the things, but allow more time for interaction. So I'm going to request you, when we present, please don't take long. I do not have enough time today, unfortunately, as chair, but I would like members to leave the meeting having asked the questions that they've picked up on your annual report. I note that you have introduced yourself, and normally the procedure is to allow the chair to open. But if you wait, if you have, if you're comfortable, you can allow your members to, the CEO, to proceed. But I start with the chair.
Thanks, chair and members. Asset CITA is ready to deliver and present our annual report for 2009-2010 through our CEO and our chief financial officer. Thank you. Over to Mr. Mupaki.
Honorable chair and members of the portfolio committee, we really thank you for giving us the opportunity to come to present to you the ICT annual report for the year 2009-2010. We are very much aware, and we want to embrace your request, Madam Chair, that we should be cognizant of the time and the time constraints. So the introduction has been done with regard to the team. What I'll do then, I'll just proceed with the presentation. I'm not going to go through the contents, I'll just pick up the first slide that has real issues that we need to deal with. In terms of the overview, chair and members of the committee, we are saying we believe that we have lived up to our mission statement in terms of providing learning opportunities to the learners out there. And mainly the information that we are presenting in Sarawak is based on the learnerships and skills programs. In terms of the discretionary fund, not necessarily the mandatory fund. In terms of the mandatory fund, we'll try and talk to that. The first slide here really talks about our complexion. As I see that, this is how we look in terms of the CEO, senior management, right up to admin staff, gender representation, and so on. Slide number 8 is about the target, the NSDS target. Mainly this is about the workplace skills plans and annual training reports. So of course there is a requirement that we should submit the sector skills plan, and we have done that, then to the Department of Labor. We were required to put together a critical skills guide document. That should inform our stakeholders out there as to what kind of careers and opportunities are available in the ICT space. Young Friends, 147 was a target and ended up with 194 submitting. Small Friends, we had a target of 738 and we had 1,129 complying. What this tells us is that the level of participation from our companies is increasing on a daily basis. And by so doing, we are hoping that learners in the workplace do have many more opportunities that are initiated by employers in the workplace. As I've said, this number of companies, slide number 9, number of companies that complied. You can see the honorable chair member that from 2006-2007, large companies, the graph actually in terms of small companies, in terms of the blue, small companies 1 to 49, we've seen an increase there, 2006-2007 from 405 companies. When you go to 2009-2010, small companies participating shifted from 405 to 545. So for us, this is really encouraging. SMMEs are coming on board to participate in business development initiatives. Slide number 10, we have those indicators there about the firms. 7 was the target, we ended up with 14, 2.7. Target about 800 learners, and then we ended up with a big number there of 2,065. I should mention here, Chairperson, that when we talk about 800 in the ICT, we are actually talking about end user computing. It is not the normal 800 that we talk about. We have agreed with the Department of Labor that for us, end user computing will be quite appropriate to be classified as. One thousand four hundred and seventy-nine learners was the target. We ended up with a bigger number. Also, with the number of 1,225, we ended up also with a bigger number of learners who have completed training programs. We are required also to give opportunities to non-levy paying entities to participate in skills development initiatives, and in trying to address this target, we work with public FETs. We have a good relationship with a number of public FETs across a number of provinces, and we have a number of training programs that run in those government FETs. In this case, 8 of the FETs were in partnership with us to provide the programs. 264 learners in terms of target 4.1. Targeting programs, and we ended up with a bigger number of 1,152. The same also, we had 577 learners who completed the program. The reason why, Chairperson, as you know, 4.1, the question could be, why do we have 264 learners that started, and we end up with 577 learners completed? Because at the time of reporting, for example, you do have situations that in February and March of every year there are learners who have not actually completed the learning programs. And if that is the case, the reporting in terms of completion will be done in the following year. So that's why the number of the current would not necessarily match with the previous number. We have targeted noted, Honorable Chair, is that, for example, if we were to see Vodacom and so on, set up, centers with containers and so on. The initial training will be that learners are taken up, they are trained to run a telephone booth or something like that, fences and computer too, as a way of trying to assist young learners to start business. But more often than not, when you go to those containers after 6 months or so, find that it's a relative or a friend or somebody who's running that container, not necessarily a person who has trained to run these businesses. So there is a challenge there in trying to get young people to sort of stay in there when they are given opportunities to start a small business. So the money might not be forthcoming in the first year, second year, and so on. But I think it is a challenge perhaps because of social pressures for people to leave these containers and go and seek for better employment opportunities with better salaries and so on. We are required to work with institutes of sectoral excellence so that we provide good quality learning opportunities for the learners. We have two ISOEs that we recognize as a SIPA. Institutes to be accredited to provide new venture training qualification. We work in partnership with services CETA to do this, and in the year under review, we have 7 institutes accredited to help us train young learners on new ventures. We have a number of accredited training providers across all provinces. We know that there must be a number of these training providers in ICTs that are not coming forward to seek accreditation, but we learn with interest that the South African Police Service has been doing the rounds, visiting all these training providers and arresting them when they are found that they don't have any form of accreditation, because with us as a CETA, it has always been difficult to go and rate, as it were, the so-called fly-by-night training providers, because we were not too sure that we have the law on our side that's going to protect us as a city as we go out to try to shut down fly-by-night training providers. So we let them, the police is doing the work, and we are following the developments with keen interest. But we are also encouraging those training providers who are still operating out there without accreditation to come forward to us so that they could be helped through the process of accreditation. I think this brings me to the end of the operational section of our annual report. We'll be dealing with the financial section of our report. And when we do so, I then hand over to Mrs. Janine Duplessis to do that for us.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. If we look at slide number 20, it's a high-level breakdown of the statement of the financial performance for the ICET CETA. The total income for the year under review is 378 million, which is an 11% increase compared to the previous year, and this is despite the economic downturn that was experienced during that time. The main contributors to income has been obviously a skills development levy income, and then a large portion also is investment income, which is interest that has been earned on a 30-day fixed deposit account that the ICET has. If you look at the total expenses, which amount to 310 million, these are made up of employer grants and project expenses together with administration expenditure. ICET CETA's administration expenditure amounted to 27.5 million, and this is within the 10% legislative cap that we need to be below, fall below. This gives us a net surplus of 69 million, for the year under review. ICPTA has obtained approval from National Treasury to retain the unspent funds, which will then also be used to finance the commitments with regards to discretionary programs in the future. Let's move to slide 21. ICPTA has a total asset base of 265 million. Cash and cash equivalents is the largest portion thereof, amounting to 261 million. Liabilities are 35 million, which then leaves the asset sector with a net asset value of 230 million, which is a very healthy financial state. Asset sector also received an unqualified audit opinion for the year under review. However, the Auditor General did emphasize two matters. With regards to significant uncertainties, first of all, ICPTA has two pending litigation cases, and to date these cases also are still open and have not been resolved. The second impetus of matter was the restatement of corresponding figures in the previous year. If I can just give some background on that, is that many of the finance personnel that were present in 2008, as I said, have since left the ICPTA and there's new finance personnel, or many new finance personnel. And when the new personnel come in and some areas are picked up that relate to the 2008-2009 year, these areas are purely accounting errors, and we as ICPTA identified them, and hence we corrected the previous year's figures in the 2008 and 2009 your column in the financial report. Give all the back to the CEO, thank you.
For the presentation. I'm going to open for members to reply to the presentation. I'm noting Honorable Moshwana, Honorable Van der Luys, Honorable Zina, Honorable Dikobo, in that order.
Statement, and here it's true of you, and that is that many of
our CETA funding run through projects, and I almost want to call it ad hoc projects. A training provider would hear, you get this money for the training of 30 unemployed learners in this certificate for the next year. And then for the next 2 or 3 years, that training provider will not get the same type of support and is therefore unable to develop also his capabilities, etc. So if you could expand as to how do you assist training providers to grow and really become good and cost effective. Then my second question is, I see you have been in a struggle with your previous chief financial officer, and you are trying to retrieve almost R1 million. Can you just tell us a bit more about that? How did it come? I presume it was delays in the finalization of certain disciplinary action. But if you could just tell us, you know, why have those delays then been there, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable President. Honorable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine will be on target versus the actual. I believe, Chairperson, when you budget, you have to work even on the targets. But when you look at the report that is in front of us, we find that most of the time the target has been very low, and when it comes to the actual, In most areas, the actuals are always above the target. As to say, why do you always target a little bit lower and then achieve a little bit higher, and doesn't that affect the budget that you have done as the CETA? Secondly, there is the ICT companies as they are represented throughout the provinces. And we know how KwaZulu-Natal and Bellevue are a little bit higher than other provinces, but when you look at the Lenas provincially, it does not tally with the ICT companies that are there. I don't know, I think I was a little bit puzzled, especially on slides that didn't think I could get an explanation. Last question, when I look at the number of learners assisted to get to gain the work experience, and I'm a little bit concerned with learners with disability, Chairperson, as to say, really, if ever they can report to say there is no one that they have assisted with disabilities, what's the problem? Is it because they're not there? Or what can be the problem? Really, I think that is an area of concern when you look at that, the slide to page 15. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Igo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just firstly, I think it's a good report, good management of finances. I note the emphasis of META, some of them beyond their control. I want to know a bit more about this issue of litigation, if they don't mind. But also congratulate them for meeting the targets. I think by and large they fell way above their targets, and I'm sorry if I answer Honorable Gina in the process, that I'm aware that these targets are not set by them, but by the at the time by the Department of Labour in their service level agreement. So I want to congratulate them for that. Just when we look at where they mentioned provinces, either on experiential training, on slide 13 and slide 16. I see that other provinces are not mentioned. I've been looking at Northern Cape, and I'm trying to think, does the CETA know that there is a province that carries that name? Look, I know that you may not have many IT companies, but there is some. But also, when you look at assisting learners, I think there must be a conscious effort by the CETA to go to such provinces. Because these provinces where there are no IT companies, they are usually poor provinces, rural provinces. And it is in these provinces where you may have actually many people who need the services of the CETA. So I just want them to deal with that. but also the issue of on slide 11, non-levy paying institutions, they are mentioning 8 FET colleges. I know that this slide was presented before I came. I'm not sure if they have named these FET colleges so that one can know where they are based. Again, I want to check if there is no urban bias in those FET colleges. Lastly, the issue of new venture creation. I think we have been saying this with other teachers. I'm glad that there is the issue of tracking for 12 months. But you know, tracking for me can mean standing aside, just having a look at them. Tracking for me does not necessarily entail support by the teacher. I want to know what support is being given, because if you look at, 145 people, or 145 persons having established new ventures, but only 74 still running after 12 months. I think it's almost 5%, 50% of them have disappeared. It is cause for concern. You know, when you talk about the creation of job creation, you know, there are times to find we lose jobs that we created that lasted for a week, that lasted for a week. We're talking about decent work. Now, we have seen other cities having a program, they incubate these companies that have just, these ventures that have been established. And as soon as you incubate them, you support them. Their success rate after 12 months becomes very high. So I'm not hearing about support, I'm hearing about tracking them. So I think for now, thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, members, for those questions, and I'm going to allow you to respond. Just to check, how much, if you can just give us an indication, how much do you think your board members? Just in terms of payment to your board members. I saw an overall figure, but I want to be sure, per meeting, how much your board members.
Can I add on your question? Because I think the same question, Honorable Chairperson,
yeah,
must be send to the Auditor General. Because restating means their books were not very correct, but they were given a clean bill of health by the Auditor General, who comes back the following year and said the previous figures were not correct, when the Auditor General had said that they were okay. I think it's an important one, but part of that must go to the Auditor General. If you are restating now, why couldn't you pick this up in the following year, because you gave an opinion on the statement?
I was actually coming to that to say, I think we need to call the Auditor General's office. We need some explanation on this thing. It can't be correct. We definitely need an explanation. Because you find that, I mean, I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking, okay, you captured 20 rand. And then somebody says, why is it 20 rand? Because it's supposed to be. Then you say, no, we are correcting. We made a mistake, it's 30 rand. Where was this 10 rand sitting? I'm just making an example in a simplest term. Where was this 10 rand sitting? Had it not been, the other question is that, had it not been picked up that they go and correct, would it have stayed the same way? Which could have been true? Because it has said for the year, no one picked up, it's picked up in this year, they are correcting what happened last time. I'm just thinking that it can be correct. We can't say, that's why I'm saying there are two options. Capacity or fraudulent activities happening. Something is happening, but you can't keep quiet on this one. I think we need to write to the AG's office. We need to get some explanation on this. I think through a meeting, maybe with our last meeting, we just get a sense, even if they can write to give us a sense, this statement, of statements in the features that we have dealt with, almost about five of them, that have the same problem. So if there's a problem, you can all, it's a trend. Once there's a trend, it means there's something, and you've got to get to the bottom of it, to saying what is the problem, what is the issue, so that it can be addressed. Because if we are going to sit here, we agree that it's a restatement, therefore the AG has given a report, he has agreed with it. Next year, something like this comes up, we've got to correct it now so that it doesn't happen in the future. I just feel that way. And hopefully, Mr. Hood, from your office as well, you look into this matter with the CFO. So that we'd invite, obviously, the CFO and yourself wanting to do this matter with the AG. Let me give over to you to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members, for the questions. I'd like to respond firstly to the question with regards to board member payments. It's set out on page 37 of the annual report, and I'll just read it from there. The board members are paid an amount of 1,508 rand per meeting attended. Except for the deputy chairperson and the chairperson who received just over 2,000 rand per meeting. The audit committee members received 2,500 rand per meeting, and finance committee members 1,500 rand per meeting they attended.
Mr. Hoon, I hope you're noting the matter. Back to our issue of consistency in how we pay the board members. I was paying 300, I was not paying, I was paying 2,000. Just you can. How much is it? Is it 2,000 or is it, you're saying over 2,000?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, the chairperson of the board receives 2,484 rand per meeting, and deputy chairperson 2,174 rand per meeting.
Just in addition, Chairperson, what we do is with the Treasury, and the Treasury has a remuneration schedule for some government entities, and we tried to locate CETAs within that schedule, and that's how we're paying these amounts.
That's fine. I don't think it has to do with you. I'm just reflecting it to the department. Because we have CETAs where they literally don't pay any sitting of board members. We have CETAs who you pay 300. So we're raising it with the department to say, let's look at what causes these inconsistencies. Because you might find others, maybe it's because they receive enough support, they have enough money. Others, because there's no money in the sector, they can't even afford. But how to provide the support for the board members? It's something that we must. But also, we can't encourage the huge discrepancies because the responsibilities are almost the same. That's what we try to do. It has nothing to do with you on this one. That's why I directed it to the department. We can go ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson. We want to accede and accept that over the years, when it comes to financial administration, in terms of skills, we were wanting as a CETA that we want to accede to. That is why we have a new team of people in that department to make sure that the kind of things that happened in the previous year don't recur. If you were to look at our previous annual reports with qualifications and disclaimers, those things simply came mainly simply because of skills and capacity in a CETA, not necessarily financial mismanagement. So we acknowledge that and we're trying to do our best to address these issues. I'm trying to talk to my team, Honorable Chairperson, to see if we can share the responsibility of responding to this number of questions. But to save time, let me try and attempt to really to respond, and then we can come in where I've not addressed the issue adequately. On the question of gender, in terms of our organogram and so on, it is noted. Going forward, we'll make sure that we do the gender balances as we advertise positions and going forward. Certainly, yes, definitely. There is a question of a skills deficit. I think it was linking up with the support that we provide to training providers and the funding and so on and so forth. We have noted, Honorable Chair, that in the ICT space, contrary to popular belief and some commentators who are telling us there is a huge shortage of skills in ICTs, we tend to differ slightly with those views because it says to us when it comes to entry-level skills and middle-level skills in ICTs, we found that we don't have a shortage. That is why we try to work. In fact, we led that we're now with the Department of Higher Education and Training. Because the issue here, Chairperson, is that our young people should be encouraged to study beyond a first degree or a first degree. They should be encouraged to complete the first degree, do honors, masters, if possible, PhD. We know that most of the targeted group, if they finish the first degree, they are under pressure to go and work because of social economic imperatives. That is why recently with our board we had a discussion that we should start a bursary scheme in partnership with employers to try to assist those young people who complete, maybe even before when they complete matric, when they go to university, they should be assisted in such a way that they spend more time at varsity and come out with 2-3 degrees, because that's where actually the need is required in ICT and masters and PhD level. But with other skills below that, we have enough skills in the ICT space. But coming back to how we assist training providers, we work differently as this CETA, whether it's correct or not, I think it's for the House to guide us. We don't give funding to training providers. We give funding to levy paying employers. We give funding to constituent employers. And after signing with employers, we give them a list of accredited training providers. They are the ones who should go ahead and pick a training provider on the basis of the program that they want to run. We used to do it differently also with training providers. We got problems when it comes to non-delivery. If a company X runs a project, if we appoint it, and then we appoint a training or where, we find that there are two parties to litigate with. And then the employer would say, it's not my problem, it's the training provider. The training provider says, it's not my problem, it's the employer's problem. And we find ourselves spending more time in arbitration and in dispute resolutions and all those kind of things. But we have since learned that when we give a project to a company and they appoint a training provider, we come in for purposes of quality assurance as the project runs, you know, at the beginning, in the middle, and so on. So in that way, there isn't a direct financial assistance to training providers. Perhaps it's not right, we don't know, but we would want to get guidance in that regard.
There's a question of the previous CFO that we have paid, I think close to R1 million and so on. Initially we suspended the gentleman and then the process went on. I think after CCMA we stopped paying the previous CFO. But then we went to court. And the court made a ruling that as the matter was going through litigation, he should be paid. And we had to reinstate the salary. And unfortunately, then he had to be paid as we were waiting for the legal process to unfold. And when the matter was finalized, we won the case. Then we were required, because that's what the court said. Say, because there's no decision made, there's no reason for this person to suffer, simply because we have issues with him. So we won the case, and then after winning the case, we're trying to get back, you know, the amount of money that we paid to him.
On the question of our targets, this is the actuals that look inflated. We have a system that we started, in fact, an agreement with most of our levy-paying companies, which emanated 4 or 5 years ago when we had a meeting with the stakeholders. There was this view that a CETA, the ISAC CETA in particular, is not responding adequately to the needs of the employers out there. And this was a meeting of stakeholders. And one of the examples made was they were listing these learnership programs that we have registered and accredited that learners were trained in. And they were trying to tell us that what we are doing in terms of skills development is not impacting on what they need. Now, which was a strange revelation to us, because the very same employers are the ones who come to us with letters of intent to train learners, right? Level 1, level 2, level 3. Now, when we have trained 1,000 learners or 2,000 at the end of the year, we want to find out how many of these learners, Mr. Employer, have you placed. So they train, but they don't pay. They train, they don't pay. Now, we started asking those questions. Now, the response to us is that the learnership standards are not adequate. But we said, but you are the ones who come to us to initiate these programs. Now, to try to mitigate that so that the training should not be seen just as training to change money and so on, we said to the employers, let's get an agreement. For example, you have a company such as Telkom and Vodacom as big living companies. They come to us and propose to train, for example, 300 learners. We give them over 12 million rand or so to train 300 learners from the discretionary fund. But at the same time, you find that they've submitted a workplace skills plan and annual training report. That gives them 20 million rand on the other side. That's the mandatory part of the system. After getting half of that amount, maybe 20 million, they come to us for learnerships and they get another 12. After training with the 12 million rent, they come back to us and tell us that the learnerships don't have an impact. So to try to address this, we said to them, if a project costs 10 million rent, Mr. and Mrs. Employer, you will fund half of the amount, like 5 million, and we'll give you 5. So most of the programs that we've run here were run on a joint funding model. But as we do our budget, it is difficult based on the amount of money that we anticipate that we know that employer A will agree to a joint funding model, because we may not force them to fund jointly with us in terms of legislation. But fortunately, about 25-30 companies would come suggest to train learners and come and agree on a joint funding model.
Now, perhaps in responding to this question, it will help them to try to explain why our actuals are so inflated. As the companies come with a joint funding model, more funds become available for training programs, even though they are not in the budget. Now, with those funds, what we do, based on the question that, you know, there aren't ICT companies in other provinces and rural areas, we have a partnership, and we are continuing to build a partnership with municipalities. And we do have a list of programs that we're running with municipalities in the year under review, and even in the current year. We are very much aware that municipalities fall within the local government sector, but we are not trying to work in a silo. We go to municipalities and say to them, municipalities, we are in partnership, and go out as a municipality and identify unemployed young people to put them through mainly end-user computing learnership program. And the reason we're doing this is that end-user learning program, as we implement it, does not require workplace experiential training. The learners stay with the training company for 12 months, and we have a reason why we do that. So we now, based on the amount of money that we have, we are not able to cover all the provinces, all the municipalities, and Mr. Sbeko will help me there. What we do every year, we select certain provinces that you see in the annual report. This year, for example, we still have to report on that, but the focus has been in the Free State and in the Northwest, and I think it will be in Limpopo and in KZN, because other provinces we feel we have covered in the previous year. So that's what we do with what could be seen as excess funds, but it is mainly for end-user computing for unemployed people in rural areas. So it covers the provincial spread, that the fact that we don't have ICT companies in certain parts of the world does not mean that we should not be coming in with interventions in those areas. The question on people with disabilities. We want to accept again that we are not doing what we're supposed to do in terms of reaching the target here. But Honorable Chair, we have been working with some few institutions that have been partnering with us to train people with disabilities. Unfortunately, what we have found, Chairperson, is that there isn't really, the fact that there isn't pressure on companies to employ people with disabilities, or even if workplace experiential opportunities for people with disabilities, it affects us down the street, because there's no pressure then for people to come forward to want to train people with disabilities, because we also want people with disabilities to go to actual workplaces. Now, what has been happening in our case to try to meet this target, we have been in that case working directly with the training provider. The training provider will tell us we've got a facility. In some cases, they've got boarding and lodging, and you find people are trained there for 12, 18 months. But this is supposed to be a learnership that's got the theoretical component and the feel of the workplace, because we are preparing people for the workplace. Now, after 18 months, 50 people have been trained with disability. The company comes back to us and says they've completed the program. Give us another 50 to 100 to train. But then we're still sticking with 50, 100 people who have been trained, completed the project, and they are not employed. I think trying to address that is why we are found wanting in terms of achieving this target. So we're trying to find ways and means of really, you know, making sure that, you know, people with disabilities have opportunities. But we can only do that in partnership with the employers. Litigation, I just want to talk about those two companies.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. The question was raised under two litigations that are still pending ICT CETA. We had worked with two ICT companies that actually implemented learnership as late as 2005 and 2006. These two ICT companies failed to implement our learnership program because, according to them, they were actually in intending to train and build enough at the workplace. When we did our audit, because we always audit these companies, these couple of learners are placed in areas where you can't say this is a proper workplace. It was clearly unfair for those learners to be in those places. Immediately, we challenged them and actually suspended the program and rerouted those learners to another employers who were ready to actually offer them proper learning. But those companies started challenging us as the CETA, and the litigation has been going on for almost 4 to 5 years, and it's been in and out. When we're supposed to go to court, they don't have lawyers. When we push them, they come again and say they have lawyers. So we have companies here that actually pretend as if they are company in good standing, and they're not company in good standing. And as a CETA, we are prepared to actually challenge them, because from their side, they believe we still owe them for programs that they could not finish as a CETA. Other response is with regards to slide number, because the APT college is slide number 11, wherein we have 8 APT colleges that we worked with as a CETA. If I refer you to our annual report on page 11 of our annual report, it's quite clear that those APT colleges that we work with as a CETA are clearly in far-run areas. You see them, there are those in Dalitsu, Mkumunru, Vuselela in Northwest, Flavius Marias, in a number of rural areas where as a CETA we could not go in. As a CETA, we're very proactive and had partnerships with those APT colleges to try to train learners on end user in those far rural areas for us clearly to assist those learners to be trained.
Company that came to us through one of our leading paying companies, CS Holdings, which is today called Bytes Technologies. So they came together with this company. They were in partnership and they wanted to implement learning programs with us. We signed a service level agreement to train a number of learners with Ecuador with CS Holdings motivation. And after we did that, Ecuador came back to us and they said they want to build facilities, they want to set up physical infrastructure and a whole lot of things, and they require of us to give them surety because they are expecting funding from some overseas donors. And we said to them, no, but as a CETA, we don't think we'll be able to provide surety. Use the very same service level agreement that you have to go and seek funding if you want funding, but there's no extra document that you're going to get from the ICC that you're going to borrow money from elsewhere. So they failed and stopped implementing the program, and they were saying we've reneged on the terms and conditions of the service level agreement that we had. So in that way, we felt that we'd rather go to court. So the matter has been going on for a number of years. The question on new venture creation and the tracking. I think it is true that we're not doing enough in terms of support, because I think the fact that we have trained the learners through new venture creation, and then after they've completed, the companies give them these containers and so on, and, you know, we take it for granted that these companies will continue to support those ventures, which should also be in our interest to follow up, not just the training and things like that. So, and also, I think building partnerships with the National Youth Development Agency and other agencies, that's what we've been thinking about. That at some point, if we cannot do much, we should be able to hand over the data. Because there are agencies, you know, developmental agencies within government. If we work together, we can be able then to start certain projects and then over, so that the question of sustainability is achieved. And in this case, I think we are aware that we need to do more in terms of giving support to people who have started
respond? I have 2 minutes. Okay. Just to do another one, Magali.
I just want to ask a simple question. Where are you offering?
Our offices are in Midrand, in Galaga Estate. Thank you. We have Cape Town branch and also KZN branch, and that branch also in East London.
Thank you. So those are the three reasons. I don't have much time, Honorable Member. Can I give each a minute quickly? Honorable Dikobo, a minute.
No, I just wanted to respond to that. They were asking that they don't give money to service provider. They give to companies. I understand that. But I also understand that CETAs must also get involved in transformation, in changing power relations in our country. And when CETAs give money for service providers to do certain services, then they'll be looking at the composition of those service providers. They are compliant to BEE and all those things. Now, having left that to the companies, I'm not sure how they make sure that this thing is realized.
Honorable van der Vist, is in a minute.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I want to ask for your comments on yesterday's announcement. It seems to me as if ICETA is going to get a few additional responsibilities, part of the MAP CETA's responsibilities, etc. Can you please comment on your readiness implement that, as well as the transformation period that will be required for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mr. Minute.
Thank you, Chair President. We note that they are in three provinces. Now, one checking is not actually another person. They may answer me next year, but who wants to check if you'll be spreading to the other provinces? We need you to do that. Thank you.
In 3 minutes, if you can respond.
Yeah, let me start with the last question. Yes, we intend to spread into to other regions to have a physical presence. We've been talking to CETA, FITD, and also with other CETA that have offices in areas that we don't have, to look at the possibility of sharing space so that we don't necessarily find our own office space. If we can team with other entities, I think it would be better to do so. So I think next time when we come to report, we'll be having a presence in areas where we do not have in terms of offices. The first question about service providers, we take it also that as we engage with yourselves as a community, we are also learning. So some of the questions that you are raising, for example, with service providers and empowerment capacity and so on, it is something that we'll take back home. And next time around, when we engage employers, and then we should be able to, you know, play into the space to make sure that the training providers are also empowered in terms of the requirements of our country. On yesterday's announcements, we somehow excited as a CETA, but we also are aware that this is a bigger challenge coming to us. It's a change of landscape, it's a change of people's life and so on and so forth. But yes, starting first April going forward, we are not expecting a smooth ride. There are people who are happy, there are people that we know are unhappy, but we are hoping that as we work together with new subsectors coming on, they will be able very soon to go beyond personal issues, personal interest, so that we focus on what the CETA really has to do. But with my little experience in the space, I know that there's going to be issues of forming and changing and all those problems before we settle down to get to do the work. But we'll try the best we can with the chairperson and other members of the authority to ensure that we are not diverted from the real goal of the new CETA.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, do you have concluding remarks or that details?
Thanks, Madam Chair and the House. From ICETA, we would
person to remember the CEO and the chair. Obviously, as I said, with the mining qualification authority, that would continue to engage and will go into detail in the new year with your new mandate and looking at broadly on the issues that you've got to cover. So on that note, I just want to appreciate the presentation. The various areas that we want to drill down into on when we have more time to engage. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.